hell, the punitive afterlife of the Christian religion, is arguably the most powerful and persuasive construct of the human imagination in the Western tradition. A subterranean realm of eternal suffering, a prison for sinful souls governed by a fallen angel who surpassed all other creatures in wickedness. Hell has inspired fear and thereby controlled the behavior of countless human beings for more than 2,000 years. Despite advances in scholarship that have called into question the authority of the Christian scriptures and scientific developments that have challenged the way we think about the human race and our place in the cosmos, the idea of hell has remained tenacious in Western thought. In modern discourse, hell serves as an all-pervasive metaphor for any kind of difficulty, hard as hell, or extreme, hot as hell. But the word has lost none of its religious currency in our so-called Age of Reason. A 2014 survey by the Pew Research Center found that 58% of American adults still believe in the existence of a place, quote, where people who have led bad lives and die without being sorry are eternally punished, end quote. That's from the opening of a really upbeat book, not the Penguin Book of Hell. Like so many of the Penguin Press collections, it is thoughtful, expansive, accessible to the intelligent reader and the inquiring mind. But unlike so many other books in the Penguin Press series, the Book of Hell takes up a topic that is all but universal in Western thought and history, grappling with the afterlife, an afterlife that so often features hell as a key component, whether by intellectuals or by the common folk culture of the time. To its credit, I think, the Book of Hell offers a mostly agnostic view of its topic, neither condoning nor chastising the writers in historic periods it delves into. We begin, as the study of Western culture and history has begun for so many decades, with the mythologies and religious interests of the ancient Middle East, those located within the Mesopotamian and Nile River cultures and empires. Our editor tells us that for so many of these ancient Western cultures, life after death was portrayed in their literature as a desolate time of pain and anguish, particularly those folks who dwelt between the Tigris and the Euphrates rivers. Perhaps no wonder they developed some of humankind's earliest great empires and societies here in the world of the living. There was little, it seems, to encourage these folks to look forward to life in the hereafter. Better to focus then on what could be accomplished here on Earth. Yet almost contemporaneously, for the ancient Egyptians, not all was doom and gloom in the afterlife. We read that when the Egyptian god of the afterlife, Anubis, weighed a dead soul's merit against a feather, a theme common to films set in Egypt, you may recall, those newly dead who had lived a good and moral life would be sent into an afterlife of light and even joy, while those whose lives, whose souls were found wanting, would be sent to an afterlife of pain and fire. Sounds familiar. The book continues to offer us surprises about Western ideas on hell. The ancient Greek thinker Socrates sounds surprisingly modern to me when writing about the intentions of the afterlife. As he wrote, those judged to have done exceptionally well toward living piously are the ones who are freed from the regions of hell. As Socrates wrote, another category fated to be thrown into the hell of Tartarus consists of those judged to have committed errors that are curable but serious. For example, people who have committed an act of violence toward a father or a mother, but live out the rest of their lives regretting it, or who have become killers under some other similar circumstances. But when these have been in Tartarus, or hell, for a year, the surge of the great river disgorges them, the killers by way of the Xynthus, and the father and mother bearers by way of another river. And as they are carried along beside the lake, they scream and call out, the first sort to those they killed, the second because they assaulted. Their calls are followed by supplication as they beg their victims to permit their exit from their river to the lake and to admit them there. If they succeed in persuading them, they get out and cease from their suffering. But if not, then they are carried off again into hell and from there back again into the rivers, and that will go on happening to them again and again until they manage to persuade those whom they have wronged, because it is the penalty imposed upon them by the judges. But those judged to have done exceptionally well toward living piously are the ones who are freed from these regions here and are released as if from prisons, moving to the pure place of residence above and dwelling on the surface of the earth. And from among these very people, those who have purified themselves sufficiently well by means of philosophy dwell entirely without bodies for the time thereafter and come to reside in places still more beautiful than those places that it is not easy to show you, and not in the time we presently have. But it is for the sake of the things we have described that one must do everything to ensure that one's goodness and wisdom is in life. Fine is the prize, and the hope great. That from Socrates. Prompts me to ask, is it any wonder that Western thinkers, steeped as they often were in Greek thinking, found that Socrates' writing was so appealing that we've made a point to keep it as part of our Western canon of thought, even into today. Leaping forward into the Middle Ages, that time in Europe between the end of the Roman Empire and the rise of the European world empires, the themes of punishments for lives badly led and rewards for those who follow the dictates of morality that are embodied are graphic examples of everyday life back in the day. There's the German lush who is condemned to an eternity of drinking pitch and brimstone, the nun who is punished for killing her unborn child. For all of its lack of daily niceties as we know them today, these Middle Ages were full of imaginative stories that enforced the mores and morals of their day, and particularly the horrors of an afterlife in hell with fanciful and artful images. On our tour of the hell this literature leads us through, we see and read the gradual transformation during the Protestant Reformation era, well into the 19th century, a revision of hell from an afterlife place of eternal physical torment to an afterlife place of eternity, which is not so much fire and brimstone as it is emotionally bereft of the joy of God. Indeed, while the idea of hell as a place of fire and brimstone continues to be preached by some even today, the editors of this Penguin tome remind us, too, that in the modern day, the concept of hell is not only morphing into an afterlife of emotional grieving, but is coming under more and more intense scrutiny by an increasing number of theologians for whom hell is dismissed as no more than a fairy tale meant to scare rather than to edify. A recurring motif throughout the Penguin Book of Hell is the focus on the individual, be that individual a god, a king, a queen, a peasant. The drive to state the effects of the afterlife of hell in personal terms is strong, all the more to warn us as readers and listeners that these stories and exhortations of the fate awaiting us if we do not follow our society's rule for a good life. And so it is that we read excerpts from the ancient past into the present day that feature the story of the Sumerian Gilgamesh, of the Roman Aeneas, of the horrible afterlife fates awaiting a drunken knight and an atrocious duke. And moving into more modern-day literature, the hell experienced by Renaissance Dante and the stories of hell told to children and adults into our contemporary times that focus on the torments any individual will suffer if they do not repent of their sins and live a good and virtuous life while on earth. Reading this book, I came to the conclusion that, in the end, the concept of and the fear of the reality of hell is not likely to leave our vivid imaginations anytime soon. For to study the ancient literature of the West is to study elements of hell and the afterlife. To see a modern-day horror film is to experience a hell of movie-making fears. To hear the stories of the man-made hells of the present, as the Penguin Book of Hell does in its final chapter, the reality of the 20th and the 21st century history that we are living through now, is to remind us so powerfully that hell, as a physical place of pain and as an emotional state of fear and utter emptiness, can still be and will be expressed intensely in our lives here on earth, as much as in a distant afterlife far away from where we are now. It is still very much a part of the world in which we live today. The Penguin Book of Hell concludes with a short reverie on what the editors describe as the suffering of pre-modern sinners consigned to hell, the horrors of solitary confinement in our modern prison system, and the hellish interrogation tactics of our own U.S. government that have come to light from studies done about those suspected terrorists interned at Guantanamo in Cuba. I want to give the editors their due by concluding with their own comments about the mixtapes that are said to be played to break down prisoners at the U.S. military base in Guantanamo Bay. This is what our authors conclude their book by saying. Music carried cultural content as well, our editors tell us, which interrogators employed to intimidate and humiliate detainees. The lyrics of rap and heavy metal songs were threatening to hear, but the purring and panting of female singers like Christina Aguilera seemed to have been chosen specifically to offend the religious sensibilities of Islamist prisoners. The ironic cloying sentiment and the maddening repetition of songs for children, like the I Love You song by Barney and Friends, and commercial jingles like the Meow Mix theme, made these tunes especially effective instruments of torture. Lastly, loud music also had an influence on U.S. interrogators themselves, who digested the violent lyrics of heavy metal and rap songs to strip themselves of any empathy for their captives. Here follows a sample of the songs played again and again at maximum volume to break the will of enemy combatants at Guantanamo Bay and other U.S. detention centers around the world. In the context of harsh interrogation, with no legal recourse or hope for freedom, these songs and others like them became the soundtrack of hell for those subjected to them. The soundtrack? Christine Aguilera, Dirty. Barney and Friends, I Love You Song. Decide, F You God. Drowning Pool, Bodies. Eminem, Kim. Marilyn Manson, The Beautiful People. The Meow Mix theme. Nine Inch Nails, Somewhat Damaged. Queen, We Are the Champions. And Britney Spears, Baby, One More Time. Hell, as it is lived today. The Penguin Book of Hell, part of the Penguin Classics series. It's quite a read, and certainly not something you probably want to read right before bedtime, not right before going to sleep, but certainly a book that will make you think about life, about being human, and about what might await us in the future. The Penguin Book of Hell is available at all of our fine local libraries, including the West Lafayette Public Library.